From the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard, an hour dedicated to pressing issues in the Commonwealth. I'm Tom Martin, and thank you so much for joining us this morning. Lots of news these days about the declining jobless rate, with new stories developing about potential workers still out there, ready and willing and still needed. Many of us in this region have a hard time recalling any period similar to this. Some employers are turning to what could be described as non-traditional employees, those with criminal records, former drug addiction, or with a disability. Joining me this hour to discuss this corner of the labor market and the unique situation we find ourselves in is David Boggs, President and CEO of OWL, Opportunity for Work and Learning. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Tom, and thank you for having me join you this morning.
Glad to have you, and joining us a little bit later in the hour on the phone from his restaurant in Lexington will be Rob Perez. If you live in or you visit Lexington, you probably know of his restaurant chain, Saul Good, and you may have heard or read about his intriguing new concept, Deviate Kitchen, where Rob offers employment to people who have been through drug rehab, giving them a chance to restart their lives and to make a living. If you'd like to comment, our email is easternstandardweku@gmail.com. And if you'd like to join the conversation, that is 800-621-8890. Well, David, first of all, if you could begin by letting us know what OWL does. What is OWL?
Yes, OWL, Opportunity for Work and Learning, started in 1961 with a mission of helping people improve their quality of life. And we do that through employment. It may be someone with a disability that is physical or mental or a co-occurring disorder. And more importantly, we've expanded our mission to include those that are returning from incarceration to help them employment and better their lives.
And when we talk about second chance employment, that's really who we're talking about, isn't it?
Yes, those that are needing a new opportunity to jumpstart and restart their lives.
And so how do you do that? How do you help them restart?
We have a manufacturing environment in our facility that also provides them essential skills training, which they are desperately needing, and our workforce is screaming for it out in the communities. And along with that, we provide them support through the other needs that they have in their lives.
Let's drill down a little bit further into that. Who are you hearing from out in the employment community, the business community? What kinds of workers are they looking for that you can respond to?
With the low unemployment rate that we have, especially in Fayette County, of just a little over 3%, employers at every level are looking for qualified workers, and they're going deeper down and searching for those employees that may have not even had the opportunity to apply for those jobs before. It may be service industry jobs, or it may be some technical skilled jobs in technology or healthcare.
We've been seeing a very, very low national unemployment rate since it broke below 5% back in January of 2016. It's a bellwether number that we use to determine how our employment picture is going. Now stands at 4.1%. That's the national rate. And for perspective, the Federal Reserve designates a rate of between 4.5 and 5% as natural in a healthy economy. So we're below that at 4.1. And Mark Zandi, he's a chief economist at Moody's Analytics, is predicting that the country is headed for a jobless rate of 3.5% this time next year. And that's a level that's been reached only two other periods since the government began keeping these records way back in 1948. To bring it home, here in Kentucky, the rate is already in the 3% range in seven counties, and among them, or Fayette, Scott, Woodford, and Madison counties, all in the 3% range. So all of this is to say the labor market is very, very tight, and that's forcing companies across the country and in our area to consider workers who once most likely would have been turned away. And that's providing opportunities to people who have, as we've mentioned, long faced employment barriers such as criminal records, disabilities, prolonged bouts of joblessness, and so forth. What sorts, if you could describe for us the kinds of barriers the individuals who come to OWL are looking to overcome in order to find work?
Well, a lot of our individuals may have a mental disability, and ironically, 70% of those that are incarcerated have some type of mental disability. So their problem is compounded when they have multiple misdemeanors or felony convictions on their record. Thus, it creates a double blow to them when they get out and start trying to look for a job. Also, health care is so critical for them. And housing. Housing is such a barrier for all those that come through our doors. And, of course, one that we take for granted sometimes is the transportation barrier, where people just cannot get back and forth to work because of maybe losing their driver's license or not being able to afford transportation.
Do you help with those things in some way, both housing and transport?
We do not do housing ourselves. However, our staff that works with this population particularly have lots of resources, and we help connect the dots for them so that they'll be able to find a safe housing place so that they'll be able to get out and get to work. And then, too, with transportation, we are able to provide stipends sometimes for those that need that till they can get those checks rolling and be able to afford the bus route.
And how do you do that? You're a nonprofit, so do you write grants? Do you accept contributions, that kind of thing?
Of course, we always accept contributions, but we are blessed to have some grants. We have a grant for out-of-school youth, and we were fortunate enough to receive one of the grants for economic development from Lexington, Fayette, Auburn County government that focuses strictly on reentry, not only reentry for offenders, but reentry for anyone that's been out of the workforce for a while. But the bulk of our funding comes through our manufacturing program that we have.
And is OWL known among the prison population? Do inmates know that they have this option when they're about to be released? And do they come to you having heard about it?
It's amazing how word spreads throughout the prison system, because it's very often that we receive letters from those that know that 6 months down the road they're going to be released, so they will contact us. And our State Department of Criminal Justice and Corrections is doing a better job on reentry to start connecting the dots for them. Of course, we belong to the Bluegrass Reentry Council, which helps us to automatically connect with probation and parole officers.
I was talking a little bit earlier about what's going on in the national scene, and in studying this topic, I came across something that really struck me. This is from Dane County, Wisconsin. That's Madison. Madison is the county seat there. Their unemployment rate, you know, we were saying it was amazing that we are going to be going down into the 3.5% range in the next year. Their unemployment rate right now, 2.3%, which is just unheard of. And so demand for workers there has grown so intense that manufacturers in the area are now hiring inmates at full wages to work in factories even while they're still serving their sentences. And the state officials who are encouraging this are saying that it gives these inmates a chance to build some savings, to learn vocational skills, to prepare for life after prison. Are you seeing anything like this in Kentucky?
We are just starting to explore this in Kentucky and have some prison industries that are being very successful. However, our Department of Corrections and Justice Cabinet is looking at new and innovative ways and looking at some of these models nationally. You know, there's still yet a certain group of population that believes, oh, we need to lock them up and throw away the key. However, we take for granted sometimes that 99% of those that are incarcerated will be returning back to our communities. And if we don't prepare them to enter back into our communities, then we're doing a disservice for them and our communities as well.
What kinds of jobs are typically available for somebody who has been incarcerated and has come to your program?
When they come to our program, they get all those essential skills as they work in our manufacturing group. And then our employment people will provide them assistance in locating jobs that will permit people with backgrounds to go to that. And we are finding more and more companies like construction groups, manufacturing groups, service industry jobs that are being more receptive. There's not a standard across the board saying, well, if you're out this long or if you've done this. So we're really honing in on who will be open to the marketplace.
And I'm wondering, how is this managed? How is somebody who has served time for breaking the law successfully integrated into a workforce of law-abiding co-workers?
A lot of that is done through community agencies, and it's also done through our churches now. Everybody's starting to realize, hey, we do need to provide them with a second chance. Some people are much easier to place into employment. We have some good construction trade skills going on in our institutions, as well as some things in technology and a lot of entrepreneurship type programs.
Do when a former inmate is brought to a company and brought to the factory floor, do other employees know? Are they aware?
We're very open with our candidates when they go out and look for a job, because everyone, most everyone, does a background check. And so we don't want them to be dishonest. We want them to say, I have this gap in my employment or in my resume because, and now I've changed my life and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity. And usually everybody on the floor knows. Lexington is overall a small community and everybody knows each other. So it's nothing to keep a big secret.
Wonder if you could cite an example. Don't have to name names, but just somebody that you can think of that's gone through this and what happened as a result.
You know, a lot of times when people reenter, it makes them a much better person and a stronger person, especially if they go into particular jobs. For instance, we had a young man from our area be incarcerated for an extended period of time. He came to Al. He worked in our program. He was promoted in our program. And now he's serving in another human services program, helping young men and ladies in the same predicament he was in to enter back into the workplace. And by him already going through that experience, they can identify with him, and they are much more acceptable to working with him.
Can you tell us about... Well, let me just ask you this. I looked at some job market data, an analysis of job market data, and they have found an increase in postings open to people without experience, which is kind of counterintuitive, not something you would expect to find. And unemployment rates have actually fallen sharply in recent years for people with disabilities or without a high school diploma. Again, that's a national picture, but is it much the same on the local level?
Yes, that's the same on a local level. You know, a lot of our employers today are looking for individuals who have those skills, like I can work with others, I can communicate well, I will show up on time, I will be there when you need me. And therefore, they are saying, forget that degree that you may have or that past you may have. I'm looking for people that's ready to move forward with their life and our business at this point in time.
Okay, David Boggs, Opportunity for Work and Learning, stay with us. Coming up after the break, we're going to go to Lexington and to DV8 Kitchen, where owner Rob Perez is waiting to tell us how he's helping people coming out of drug rehab, how to help them restart their lives. The discussion continues on Eastern Standard in just a moment on the WEKU Network of Stations. You're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU. I'm Tom Martin, and we've been talking with David Boggs of Opportunity for Work and Learning about his efforts to help people overcome barriers to employment. We ask you to stay with us, David, as we're joined now on the phone by Rob Perez, who, along with his wife Diane, is the founder of the Saul Good Restaurant Group in Lexington, and now a very special eatery called DV8 Kitchen. Hello, Rob.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Very good. Thanks for joining us.
And, my pleasure.
First, I know your background, but I'd like to share that with our listeners because it's really interesting. California farm kid who comes to owning restaurants in Lexington, Kentucky. I know there's a long story from California to Kentucky, but if you could put it in a nutshell, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to get asked to go on board with the Hard Rock Cafe when there was only 6 restaurants, and we bounced with Hard Rock from Dallas to Orlando to Miami, and I had 2 roles. I was an operator, and then I went in development, and super fun, super great. At one point, the CEO left Hard Rock and went to work for the Walt Disney Company and asked if I'd go with him. went back to California and worked for the Walt Disney Company, working on new concepts outside of the theme park environment. Did that for, 8 years, and that was wonderful. And it was time to kind of get out of the big city. And my wife and I looked for employment outside of a big city, more in mid-America. And we ended up here in Lexington working with a franchise group out of Lexington, Kentucky. And we feel blessed to be here, let me tell you.
Well, we're glad you're here too, Rob. And of course, one outgrowth of your arrival here is the Saul Good restaurant chain. I think there are three of them in the Lexington area now, correct?
You're correct, yes.
And a fourth on South Broadway that is nothing like the Saul Good chain, and for a reason. It's titled DV8 Kitchen. Can you tell us what's special about it?
Yeah, DV8 is a fast casual restaurant that has a bakery directly inside of the restaurant. So it's kind of what people in the rent industry now are coining foodertainment. It's scratch kitchen. It's all no preservative baking, and it is designed to be really great and delicious. And in addition to that, we actually are providing second chances to people that are in early stages of alcohol or drug recovery. And we're taking a workforce that, is a lot of times disenfranchised, and we believe that we're giving them opportunity that a lot of people aren't willing to do today. And we are finding that it's been incredibly rewarding, not only for them, but for us.
And you opened, I believe, late last summer, correct?
Yeah, we opened up on the 28th of August.
Okay. Now, you're doing this at a time when many employers in Eastern Kentucky in particular are having quite a tough time keeping workers due to drug issues, and you're embracing what many are avoiding. Seems counterintuitive. Why are you doing that?
Well, a lot of it has to do with our own personal experience. I also am a recovering addict. I went through rehabilitation when I was 25 years old, 28 years ago. And we've lost 13 people to drugs or alcohol to death at all of our Saul Good restaurants. We see what the opioid addiction, is doing to the wonderful adopted state of Kentucky. And we just felt, in particular, my wife felt it was important that we try to do something about it and not sit on the sidelines and maybe get our hands a little messy, but it's going to be worth it.
Talking about getting your hands a little messy, you've been at it now since late summer. What have you learned so far in this experience?
Oh, my goodness. First, that the folks that are in recovery that are actively trying to fix, kind of the trajectory of their career, their life, their relationships, that are in rehab and really working hard to reconstruct what they're doing, deserves a second chance. And right now with HR, kind of the attitude that you have to have protection and liability protection, that there's not a lot of opportunities for people to get meaningful jobs after going through rehab, which also generally incorporates incarceration. Sometimes the work background isn't a strong reference.
Do you have much turnover?
It's incredibly low. The industry average is just south of 100% annually, and we've only lost six people total in over 5 months.
And how about staff management, taking into account the circumstances of many of your employees? Are these folks that you're bringing in, are they stepping into management positions?
They are. I mean, we have actually been working with several people to give them management experience. But in regards to how much harder it is, I don't think it's all that much harder. It's a little bit more time consuming, and it really is relationship based. And we're finding that if we get into a relationship, and it's a professional relationship with, accountability and love at the same time, but it has been incredibly rewarding to see all of the relationships grow, the commitment grow, and really the pride in what they do every day. And it is important to have a relationship with someone in recovery, and that is really the only difference. The reliability is about the same as, you know, the way that we hire and employ people at Saul Good. The work effort, I think, that might even be a little stronger here, maybe because of the relationship, but it's not all that different.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, I know that you chose your location there on South Broadway near where the Coach House used to be for a reason. And we might bring David back into this conversation in just a minute, because I know part of that reason has to do with the proximity of public transit, but also the proximity to something else. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we are in a really nice proximity and kind of a triangle with several residential living facilities, and that is where we receive our employees. We're looking for transitional living facilities to partner up with us so that they can provide us with employees to interview that are in a program, that have a structured living environment, and that are drug and alcohol tested weekly, so that they could provide us with those services after, you know, having HIPAA documents signed between the client, the house, and us. And so it provides us with a wonderful opportunity to make sure that we partner up with them, and we provide the employment, they provide the social services.
And so you are on a bus line as well, right?
We're on a bus line, and we're smack dab in the middle of the three largest residential living facilities here in town. So we're really close, and it's an important part of being here.
Okay, and stick with us, Rob. I want to go back to David here for just a second about this transportation issue, because I know that it's a big one that is quite an impediment, even for somebody who has gone through your program and is ready to go to work. Still, there is the issue of getting there.
Yes, it's transportation is still critical because, unfortunately, a lot of times the jobs that individuals need to do are third shift jobs. So maybe the bus doesn't run at that time, or it doesn't run on the weekend at a particular time. And so we have a lot of people that find someone to ride with, which really works out fine, but still yet you never know when shifts change or whatever. So transportation is a barrier, and we see it even more in the other counties that we provide services for. Just this next week, Scott County is going to launch their first transportation program that will help a whole lot more people there. And Frankfort has one that they're expanding, but that is certainly an issue in every community.
It's a costly one to overcome, too, isn't it? It might seem easy to say that we ought to do more about our public transit, but it's a very expensive endeavor.
Yes, it is. And you know, fortunately, they get a lot of federal subsidies for the transportation, but still yet, that's not enough to meet the humongous need that we have.
Okay, Rob, going back to you, you mentioned a little bit earlier that you have lost 13 employees. Over what amount of time has that happened?
Well, it's three restaurants. The first one's 10 years old in March. The second one's 7 years old. And the third one is 4 years old. So, you know, a cumulative of 21 years, we've lost 13 people.
That seems pretty exceptional. Is that the norm in the restaurant industry, do you think?
Yeah, This is an industry I absolutely love. I adore it, and I believe in it. But I think that there's probably both. We're attractive. We're an industry that's attractive to folks in addiction because of the cash money. You can change out your shifts whenever you want to. But I think that we also, because of when we're open and the weekends and the type of college kids that we frequently employ, there's always a good time, and I think that that's what allures the group, and it's unfortunate, but I think it is an industry problem.
We're talking this hour about the state of employment in Kentucky, and we have in the studio with us David Boggs of Opportunity for Work and Learning, and online from Lexington from his restaurant, DV8 Kitchen, Rob Perez. And what brought us here is an exceptionally low unemployment trend out there, which sounds great, and it is great, of course. Everybody that wants to find a job pretty much has one. But there still are folks on the margins who, for one reason or another, be it a prison record or a mental disability or physical disability, an accident that has kept them unemployed beyond the length of time that reentry is reasonable. These are have been impediments to overcome, and now they're being overcome by the demand. David, who are you hearing from? Can you, I don't know if you can name names, but of employers, but what kinds of employers are you hearing from in this area?
We hear from basically every segment of employers, from entry-level jobs to skilled jobs. And we're finding that a lot of people who are reentering have degrees, but because of an opiate addiction or some other unfortunate circumstance they found themselves in, that they're needing employment. And so we try to match the employer with our candidate for the job. Therefore, the success rate is much better. And I want to applaud Rob and what he's doing with his restaurant at this time, because we have found the food service industry to be a great helpmate in assisting individuals that are returning from incarceration. They have much more flexible hours. They're willing to work with individuals with a background. And so they are a key person that we turn to a lot, especially in the service industry business.
Okay, going back to Rob, you have been at it for roughly 6 months now with the DVA Kitchen Endeavor. Any favorite stories? Is there anything that's come out of that so far that you're going to remember for a long time?
Yeah, there's probably 100 stories. But, you know, at Deviate, what we're trying to do is, just like any business, this is a for-profit business. So we'd like to try to figure out a business model that works strongly. And second of all, we try to have social impact. And third, our mission, personally, between my wife and I, is to have some spiritual touch. We had a young woman that unfortunately went to church one night with us and found out that she had lost her sister. And she came back to work on Tuesday after that Sunday like a trooper, and she's wonderful. And she sat through something that Community and Ventures did. We have workshops every Tuesday. And she sat down and listened to this workshop after going through a traumatic experience. And part of the discussions they had was biblical teaching of money and tithing and giving and all that kind of stuff. Wednesday, she comes in and she had a $300 check on Wednesday. She came to my wife and said, "Hey, I want to give 10% of my check to tithing for a charity that my wife worked for called Natalie's Sisters." And it was just an unbelievable thing for her to lose someone Saturday night and then on Wednesday give a 10% of her check when she doesn't have much. And it was just a heartwarming instance.
You know, that reminds me that I think there are statistics out there to support this, that the proportion of giving is much higher among those who have less to give. Have you heard that? Have you heard that, David?
Yes, this is a conversation about reentry, but God is always faithful to those that try to do the right thing and give back to support the community and help those that are less fortunate too.
How do you see, some business leaders may chafe at the idea of social responsibility, about getting involved in helping people change their lives, that's not really focusing on the bottom line. Then again, maybe it is. I'd like to hear from both of you what you think about a business's social responsibility. How about you, David?
Well, social responsibility is a growing thing among different businesses, especially our millennial population. They're really entrenched with social responsibility. And, you know, we are finally realizing that someone reentering or someone with a disability is not just an individual concern, and it's not just a family concern, but it's a community issue. And that's where the social responsibility comes in. And more people are buying into that, I think.
And you, Rob, what's your thought about that?
Yeah, the interest in Deviate, you know, it's really what we're trying to do is just shine a light on this issue. And we're just hoping that that what people are responding is that they do want to get their hands dirty. They do want to help, but they don't know exactly how to do it. And it's not as satisfying anymore for people to pass a check onto an institutional, you know, giving group. And they should still do it. But I think people want to be more actionable. And there's a lot of interest in the idea of having a socially motivated business. And, you know, we would applaud anybody that wanted to try to do it.
Okay, Rob, if you will hold that thought and stay on the line with us. We are talking this hour about the state of employment in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, with many businesses looking to hire and finding not quite enough qualified applicants. And we want to know your story. Are you a small business owner looking for workers and having trouble finding them? How have you tried to reach out and find qualified or trainable help? Or maybe you're looking for a job and you keep getting turned away for a variety of reasons, and this period of needing workers hasn't hit you yet. What have you tried, and what are you being told if you're being turned away? You can reach us with your comments at 800-621-8890 or email us at easternstandardweku@gmail.com. The discussion continues on Eastern Standard in just a moment on the WEKU network of stations. I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU network of stations, and we're talking about a tight labor market, jobs waiting to be filled, and how the situation is creating opportunities for many to overcome what have been barriers to finding gainful employment. With us are David Boggs of Opportunity for Work and Learning, and Rob Perez of Lexington's unique DV8 Kitchen. And let's hear from you. Have you been through something that derailed your career and are now looking for a way to get back on track? Are you an employer in need of workers? How do you feel about second chance employment? You can call us at 800-621-8890 or email us at easternstandardweku@gmail.com. David, back to you. An employer is listening to this and may be thinking, well, I'm kind of interested. Is there an incentive to bring them along?
Actually, there's a lot of incentives for employers that they can take advantage of. First of all, there's a great deal of accountability when you're working with an individual that's a returning citizen, because they're having to be accountable to themselves and to maybe a probation and parole officer, or just accountable to their friends and family. And then, too, there's the work opportunity tax credit that is available to employers if they wish to pursue that. And then, too, something that Rob hit on earlier is the fact that a lot of times your employees are already being drug tested, especially if they're still in a transitional living facility. So that helps the employer know that they have good, clean employers that are there to work for. And then, too, one of the most critical things that's often taken for granted is that this population, for the most part, when they come to you and you offer them a position, they give that employer the best they can every day.
They really want it, don't they?
They really want to work, yes.
You know, I asked Rob this question before I ask you. You've been at this for quite a while. Are there any particular stories that stand out in your mind that you carry around with you and feel that, boy, that was something?
Oh, we have some amazing success stories at Al every week and every month. And you can find them on our website if you want to go and look at some of those. But one that just immediately comes to my mind, because we're on the campus of EKU, is someone that graduated here with a degree in IT. Due to an injury, they became addicted to opioids. How many times have we heard that? They end up in the court system. Then they end up at Al through drug court. And now that person is still working for us and has moved from just a beginning employee to a supervisor and is in charge of one whole division in our area.
You know, you brought up opioids, and this is not a program about opioids, but in this day and age, pretty hard to escape the subject. And we probably will go into it in depth on another program on Eastern Standard down the way. But just to touch on it for just a second, I actually bring personal experience to that story. I'm a person who was injured and went through surgery and was prescribed an opioid, and it was handed to me just like in any medicine that you would receive after surgery. And I found it horrible. And I've heard so many stories now, because you tend to draw people with similar stories once they hear that you've been through the same thing. I've heard so many stories now about people who inadvertently found themselves in this position of addiction. I feel very fortunate to have been able to wean myself very quickly from them, because I didn't like them, didn't like the effect, pain or no pain. But not everybody is quite so fortunate. Are you seeing a lot of that, a lot of people who have come to opioid addiction through some accident, injury?
Yes, we even have had people come through our program that got addicted to opioids through having a tooth extracted. Hmm. You know, they get that and they feel better about themselves and go, oh, this is pretty good, I'll continue taking it. Before long, they're trapped through this. And, you know, there for a while, people were in denial. Our communities were in denial. But, Tom, I appreciate you sharing your story, because this has touched every family in every community, no mm-hmm. matter what their socioeconomic status is. It's touching lives everywhere at every level.
And, Rob, what are you seeing on the drug side of things? What's most prevalent among those that you're dealing with?
Yeah, we see people mainly about 60 or 70% in the opioid category, about 20% in alcohol, and then the rest would be in methamphetamines. But it is rampant. And, you know, I think that you're correct. The number one way that people get exposed to opiates are through prescriptions. And, you know, hats off to the state of Kentucky. They have realized that the amount of opioids that are being prescribed in the past was way too much and were in people's medicine cabinets, and they've done something about it. And now they have some of the best laws governing that you can find. So hats off to Kentucky for really making sure that they rein those in.
We're fighting our way back out of it, huh?
Yes.
We might have touched on this a little bit earlier, but if we could go over it one more time, what sort of criteria do you have in your mind and in front of you when an applicant comes from rehab and wants to work at DVA Kitchen? What are you looking for?
Well, it depends on if there's some skill level involved in a kitchen, or if there is a personality type to work in the front of the house. We really believe we could train anybody that's motivated to do either, but sometimes when we're hiring, we just need to find out that people have a propensity to be, you know, used to working with their hands in the kitchen and working in small spaces, or having a personality that was extroverted in, you know, at times, that would be comfortable working with the public. But really, that's all we look for. Besides the fact that they're in a structured living environment, besides that they're willing to get drug tested, that they're willing to take a chance on being employed in a place that if they fail in their recovery, they'll also get terminated. And so the barrier is kind of low, to be super honest.
Hmm. How about you, David? Do you find yourself kind of in the role of ringmaster or catalyst? You are trying to match up an employee's personality and skills with a particular job opening that you're aware of?
Yes. Even in our facility, we receive probably 25 to 50 applications a week. Individuals that come to us because of a disability, whether it be physical or a mental situation, or whether it's an offender reentry. And so it's very critical to match that individual with the employer, whether it's at Al in our manufacturing or whether it's out in our community, because that really helps determine the success or failure of that individual.
You know, I'm really curious, listener, are we talking about you? Are we talking about you as an employer or as a potential employee who's going through these issues? We'd like to hear about it. You can reach us at 800-621-8890. Or you can bang out a quick story for us on Eastern Standard weku@gmail.com, and we'll be checking that as well. So that's 800-621-8890, and we'd appreciate your call. Back to you, Rob. Where are you going with this now? Do you see any expansion in the future of this concept, or you pretty much have your hands full as it is?
Well, what our focus right now is trying to get the labor model correct so that, you know, we could be a little bit more profitable so that we can eye maybe some expansion. I think the traditional way of thinking is to try to figure out how to improve the sales in our wholesale baking business. And that would require us to go to a kind of a warehouse space where we can start doing baking in a more meaningful and maybe a little bit more industrial way, and then still maintain the baking within the restaurant, you know, as well. So the hopes is that we could put people into a position where they're learning a trade, not just a service industry job, but you know, we're trying to do both. The hopes are maybe that potentially we can have another Deviate at some point when we understand the business a little bit more and we have some history behind us. That's the hope. The more restaurants, the more jobs, the better we think that we can make an impact.
And David, are you feeling pressure under these conditions that we've been talking about, the high demand for your employees to expand in any way?
We are approached all the time about expanding our model in the state because there's no other area that has an exact model like ours with the employment and the job placement together. So we keep looking for ways to expand. There in Lexington, we have 87 employees. Our business model is based on not the selling of a product, but the product services that we do for 26 different manufacturing groups across Central Kentucky.
26?
Yes.
And in this local area here, again, I know I've asked this before, but coming at it a different way, are they really clamoring for your people?
Yes, we have such a great staff that works with job placement that any individual that is a part of our programming that meets the requirements to work there, if they really want to find a job, we can find them a job in the community.
Okay. Rob, you're in the business, in the restaurant business. I'm sure that you rub elbows with other folks who are in the business. Is your idea at all catching on? Has anybody else expressed interest in giving it a try in some way?
Yeah, I have a guest every single day ask me how they can do it in their particular field. And, you know, let's just stay with addiction. I think that it's going to take not only policy change in our government, but it's probably going to take each individual person to take a chance on someone in their chosen field or their chosen profession in order to start making a difference. Because what the folks need, the second chance folks need, is a chance, and they need a relationship, and they need some sort of a job, meaningful, gainful employment. And that's what we all need to do to try to figure out not only the social issues of low employment, but also to fix the social ill.
What needs to change on the public policy side?
Well, I personally think that we really need to figure out how, if someone is in recovery, to be able to address the ability for an employer to keep liability insurance. But currently, it's just an automatic no. And people that are in rehab that have gone through detox and 6 months of trying to understand why they are the way that they are and to try to rebuild their life are being told no in a job because they have, whether it's shoplifting or drug possession, some that are just misdemeanors that people refuse jobs for. Some of them are more serious, and some of them are for incarceration. But when are we going to give folks a chance? And right now, especially big employers, have HR policies saying that my insurance will not cover me if there's an incident with someone with a background as such. And I think that that needs to be addressed if someone is trying to fix what, you know, their life. They're trying to earnestly change.
So it sounds like what you're talking about is a bridge between that willingness to step forward and offer that second chance versus a fear, a concern that you could jeopardize your business, that you could wind up going down the rabbit hole of being caught up in somebody else's issues. What you're talking about is a government intervention in that space.
What you said earlier about policy change is that our state, as Rob mentioned, has done a lot of great things in that, but still yet it costs about $31,000 a year to incarcerate one individual. For a very small fraction of that cost, a very small fraction, agencies such as Deviate Kitchen, Opportunity for Work and Learning, Jubilee Jobs, and other great programs in our community can help someone establish a career. And we need to look at ways to get that cost funneled down to agencies such as ours instead of just being incarcerated.
And Rob, I think you were going to say something there too.
I just think that there's not only that, but we also need to at least consider the fact that, you know, we kind of have a moral obligation as well. So individuals can also look at this and say, hey, look, I just want to make a difference with just one person. And so I don't think that it all relies on the government. I think that it just has to be all of us. Well, let's say that you have a personal affinity for foster care. You know, do something for foster care. I think it's just about doing something to have gainful employment that means something to you deeper than the bottom line.
Okay, and I'm going to digress for just a second here. This is live radio, and live radio can be really fun. And so everybody, Rob is in his car. You're in your car because we didn't want him to be interrupted. You're the duty manager today there at DV8, and lots of opportunities to be interrupted. And you've had to put a sign in your window, right?
Yeah, you know, we're pretty active in the restaurants, and people come to see sometimes our managers, my wife, myself, and people kept on coming up while I'm on this radio interview in the middle of a conversation and trying to get my attention to talk to me while I'm in front of the restaurant in the car. I had to put up a sign saying I'm on the radio and kind of show it nicely. It's fourth time I've had to put this sign up. It's hilarious.
Well, we applaud you for being able to maintain your train of thought through all that. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks.
So we're getting close to closing out the program. Any last thoughts that you have, Rob, that you would like to share with everybody about the experience that you're having with DVA Kitchen and working with people in need of work?
I feel like I've had so many great vocations. I've been blessed with that. I've got to do and see some really amazing things. But I can never, ever imagine a better 6 months as a business guy, as someone that takes pride in doing a job that hopefully other people think that that's pretty good. I just incorporating not only the social impact and then the spiritual touch has been so gratifying that I want to give it away. I want to just tell everybody how impactful this has been on my life. I think that we're making, you know, a difference in other people's life, but it has just changed the way I think, how I feel, and who I am. And I would share that with anybody with the hopes that they might try something similar.
Well, Rob, thank you very much for being with us on your phone, in your car, fighting off people, and for the good that you're doing in our community. And hopefully our listeners around Eastern Kentucky might be inspired to do something similar in their communities for people that are in need of just that one chance to get back into the swing of things and do the right thing by themselves and by their community. So thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And David, you're doing tremendous work in the area here, and we've been hearing all about it this hour, and we appreciate you taking time to join us today. Hopefully your expansion efforts will continue and people will benefit from them.
Thank you, Tom. And if we would just follow the leading of Rob and just love God and love people, we can all work on this together.
All right. And thanks to you, listener, for listening to Eastern Standard on the WEKU network of stations. Our executive producer is Roger Duvall. Brian Burkhart is producer, Emily Hutchison and Tristan Reynolds, associate producers. Mary Meehan is our reporter, and our technical director is Brian Bartlett. Eastern Standard content partners include the Ohio Valley Resource and the Lexington Herald Leader. And we have a big show coming up next week. Join us next Thursday at 11 for a look at variations on a theme, the shared workspace in a gig economy. We'll have people in who have varieties on that shared workspace theme all around the Lexington area. I'm Tom Martin. You've been listening to Eastern Standard on the WEKU Network of Stations. Thanks for being with us.
It's 11:59.